Hello, welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. I'm Natalie Rios, and today we'll be talking with Barbara Chamberlain and Luke Erickson about their project, The Night of the Living Dead, a zombie game that teaches teenagers the impact of saving and credit score. But I'm going to let them introduce themselves. So Barbara and Luke, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for being here. And can you tell us who you are and what you do?
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Luke Erickson. I work for University of Idaho Extension. I am the state specialist for personal finance.
Excellent. Barbara?
I'm Barbara Chamberlain. I'm a game developer and a researcher and a professor here at New Mexico State University's Learning Games Lab. We make educational games, software, apps, that sort of thing, and partnered with the University of Idaho on this game.
Amazing. So thank you, guys. Now, to begin, can you tell us what the game is about and how do kids play it?
Yeah, basically the idea is we want to teach youth how to build credit scores or prepare credit scores or something that are used in the American financial system. And, they have a tremendous impact on a person's future. So we just wanted to make sure we're getting that message out to youth as they prepare to enter adulthood. So the idea behind the game was to present those messages, but to do it in a fun and entertaining way. The parallels between debt and zombies became pretty apparent as we had the conversation, and so we decided to make the game zombie-themed, where the debts are represented by different zombies. So the kids actually go through the game, and they have to handle these zombies or these debts in a correct and wise way in order to be successful in the game.
That is great, because you're making it fun while using the metaphor of the zombies and the dead. That's really good. And can you tell us? Yeah, Barbara.
True confessions on that. There's a third partner here, Lyle Hansen. And when Luke and Lyle came to us and said they wanted to game on financial literacy, we were so excited. There were so many things we wanted to do in financial literacy. And they said it was credit score. And our team sort of said, but, you know, we'll talk to them, we'll hear it out. And they came and met with us on one of our design summits. And in half an hour, they had our entire team convinced of the importance of credit score, of the risk to our youth for not understanding credit score, and that this was the number one financial literacy issue facing our teens. And within, certainly by the first couple hours, everybody on our team said, I want to stay on this project. I want to do this content. And it was just, it was fantastic working with financial educators who understood how people think about this and the risks. So then translating that to gameplay was really fairly simple.
That is amazing. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the creative process of the game. How do you come together? How do you work together? And what were the stages of creating this financial literacy game?
Well, I'll start because, we actually had the idea that we wanted to do some youth educational games, and we didn't know exactly what. And so as we started looking around at different resources and people to work with, Barbara Chamberlain rose to the top of the list with her team there at Mexico State University. And so we had some conversations and we flew down to meet with them. And, from there, the rest is history. I'll let Barbara explain what happened from that point. But then the creative process really started to take off.
So our process is to start with a design summit. We kind of go through three steps. What is the change we want to make in the game player? What are they like before they play the game? What are they like after? What are the activities that normally lead to that change? And then how do we translate all those activities to gameplay? So what was lovely working with Luke and with Lyle is that they have been doing this kind of education for so long and so well. They knew exactly what is it that people don't understand about this? What are the risks? What is it that they almost understand or they think they understand that they get wrong? How is this normally taught? What doesn't work about that? What does work about that? Why is this a new audience or a different audience? How does that learning happen? And we had really great conversations where they helped us understand all of that. And then, as Luke said, the zombie metaphor worked perfectly because, one or two zombies in theory is not people, but if you don't pay attention to them, they're going to come get you. And so that theme kind of emerged from our discussion, and then we translated that into the things that we needed youth to be able to do in life and thus in the game and what that looked like. And then the lovely thing about credit score is it really is a score. It's a metric to help you make choices. Yeah. Life. So once you understand that it's your guide and you kind of see it as a metric, then you can start making decisions in the game that correlate to life so that you understand what kind of things raises your credit score, lowers your credit score. And sometimes it's a little surprising to how you think, and the game's really designed to help reveal that to the player.
Yeah, to show them the actual impact of their choices or bad choices or good choices. That's really good. How do you balance the fun and the educational side? Because I think that's a tricky thing with educational games, I would say. How was that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. From my perspective, education comes first. So we went in there and Barbara helped us identify the three main objectives we wanted to deliver with this program. And then we built the rest of the game around that. The fun really came when we latched onto that metaphor of the zombies and just let our minds run wild, but at that point the learning objectives were already in place, and so those were primary first and foremost, and then the entertainment portions of the game were kind of built in around that.
Really good. I was going to ask you how you used the game mechanics to meet the learning goals, so can you comment on that, how you used gamification to meet those learning goals?
Go ahead, Barbara.
So that's the magic, right? The magic happens when you take the activity you want your game player to do and you actually make that activity engaging, because problem solving and puzzle solving is inherently a fun activity. And if you step out of the way and allow that to happen, your graphics help and your theming helps and your characters help. But really, to make a game engaging, you take the activity which you want them to do, which is the challenge of keeping that credit score high or not learning, losing it, or spending the money in the proper way, or getting the house that you need, or balancing your choices about education. If you can put those in as sort of engaging challenges in the game, that will then be fun. And you don't have to dress it up in any way. You just reveal the activity as the problem that it is and then get out of the way so that the game players can engage in that. And we do a lot of user testing in our studio.
Yeah.
Start with our summit. We design it out and we kind of start playing with prototypes. And so we had some things we thought would work. And what is this? What's the number? What's the impact? And they gave us great feedback on all of that. And from the very first time we tested it, and we're kind of, you know, like, okay, we're going to put this game in front of kids about credit score. How are they feeling about it? And from the very first moment when they did something, and I forget what it was, but it could have been, for example, something where they put a lot of money on a credit card and they saw that impact and we saw the kids go, oh, man. And then they changed it. We're like, okay, yep. Learning's fun. We're good.
That's good. That's really interesting that you say that actually the process of making choices and learning, it is fun at its core. So you don't have actually to think too much. It's just it's fun. You just have to add a little bit of gamification, making it engaging. But it's true. I like that thought. Can you tell me about the process of designing a game that is not only meant for the player, but also for a supervisor? Because I think this is meant to play within a classroom. Is that correct?
That is, yeah, that was one of our goals. We wanted something we could use in a classroom. So, for me, and that's kind of something that we explained to Barbara and her team right away, is that, you know, our intention is to be able to use this game not only as an individual play game, but as a classroom based game. And so they're very open to that idea and very willing to work with that idea, even though it's hard, if you think about it, to meet both of those audience needs. But in the end, you know, just through different iterations of the game creation, we just said, well, how about we tweak it like this or do it like this so that we can use it? It's more conducive to the group setting. And I would say the iterations really helped us meet that goal.
This game can be played individually, but also in different groups, right? Within the classroom, like in collaboration or not collaborative. Can you explain us how that works?
Yeah, you know, I'll just go on that, and then Barbara can add. But I've played it cooperatively. I've played it competitively. I played it individually. And so there are many different ways to play the game. It's just a matter of how you choose to facilitate it. But that's the beauty of the way that we designed it is, you know, that it can be played individually, but it can be a very fun experience if you've got multiple iPads in a classroom and, you know, different groups or individuals who are then trying to either help each other or compete against each other with their credit score metric and just kind of see who can, you know, achieve the highest credit score in a certain amount of time or who can achieve this certain score fastest. And, you know, just different ways of facilitating the game. And it's been a lot of fun for me to explore those different possibilities.
That's really good.
You know, it's funny how what you can think of initially as a design constraint actually in the end can be a wonderful thing. And one of the things we did as part of that design summit is really assessing the environment in which it would be played. So based on all the education that they had done previously on this topic and what that looks like, they were able to paint for us a very clear picture that the situation we might be in is one person using an iPad. But the other situation we might be in is a classroom, and I think the example they gave us was like a retreat. We got 200 kids, and maybe they only have 20 iPads, and you've got to do something with the whole group, and so it needs to be something that you could have one iPad with lots of people around. And when we heard that initially, you're kind of like, oh, okay, we're going to think about that a little bit. And then as we talked about what that meant for us was a short gameplay sequence, so something that you could get through and play all the way through in about 15 to 20 minutes and immediately try it again. So in order to lure our players into kind of the common mistakes that people make, we wanted them to have an opportunity to see what those mistakes were and then immediately try it again. So one of the things that I love most about this game that I think we've done well in this game that I love seeing it played is the optimal example is when you have one iPad with 2 to 5 players and you have groups around the room. You say, okay, survive. Get through the and you just let them do it. And they're talking to each other because learning is inherently such a social activity. And they're talking to each other about, no, I know what to do about the credit card. Or, no, that's a bad, don't go to the credit loan guy. He doesn't work. And so they're talking to each other, giving each other advice, and they're succeeding and they're failing. And then you say, okay, everybody, iPads down. And then you just turn them down. And then you say, okay, let's just take a 5-minute break. I'm going to let you get back to the game. How do you win this game? Not, how do you get a good credit score? How do you win this game? And you hear these groups telling each other things. Okay, here's the deal. You got to get a credit card, but you have to pay it off. So put a small balance on there and then pay it off immediately. Gradually scale that up. And somebody else will say, go get a college loan, but get the smallest one that you can pay. Don't buy a house until your salary. And so they start telling each other these strategies to raise the game. And then immediately they all get to implement those strategies and practice those strategies they've learned. So while you can do that yourself, if it's just you playing the iPad, you play and you experiment and you try it again, and it works, it's even that much richer when you have the social environment, not in a classroom where there's necessarily a teacher telling them, but in a classroom where there's a teacher facilitating that kind of social learning that happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the beauties of serious games is that it's not about individual players. It can be, but it's also that it enables discussion, which is a key thing in learning, right?
Oh, you said that perfectly. Exactly right.
Yeah, that's great. How do students reflect on their choices? Is there an opportunity about after? It might be on discussion by talking, but can they reflect on what they did and, oh, that's why I won the game, but this is how it relates to real life. Is there something there that...
I think built into the game are, you know, are different rounds. And at the end of each round is an opportunity to review what you've done and sort of the impact that it's had. And so there's a reflection point there. I know that for me as an educator, I use the post-game play as the main reflective period. We just kind of talk for the main points and, you know, say what worked, what didn't. And just as Barbara said, depending on how you facilitate the game, but you can take a break in the middle of the game and actually have the students tell each other what they think and use that as a reflection point. You know, replayability is also something that we found is pretty high. The minute the students finish playing the game one time through, I would say the vast majority of them want to play it again so that they can beat their previous score or just do better. Yeah. And so that is also a good indicator, I think, of the idea that kids want to reflect. they naturally want to reflect on what they've done and what else they could do in the future. And so the game is obviously very conducive to that. And the way you facilitate it, there's many different opportunities for reflection.
Great. Yeah, it's being replayable makes the kids to reinforce what they learned within the game. That is the real life. That's good.
What kind of reflection have you heard from learners or people who've used it kind of after the fact? Not immediately after, but a month later or something. What have you heard from learners about how they've implemented it later?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know that I've actually followed up with a lot of our learners, you know, a month or two later as far as that, you know, longitudinal impact. Haven't done that quite yet. But I will say that the retrospective evaluations we do show that many of our participants intend to change their behaviors as a result of this game. And that's kind of what we're going for. So
that's incredible, considering this is the first time that often you that your learners have even been introduced to this topic. It's that's remarkable.
Yeah,
I think the impact is really remarkable for given the complexity of the topic, as well as the fact that especially most teenagers don't, like you said, Barbara, it's not even on their radar. They don't even know this is something they should be worrying about. So the very fact that they're aware is one thing, but the fact that they're already planning on making some specific behavior changes as a result of the program is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, it's creating the impact that you wanted, that's for sure. That's really good. What would you say were the biggest challenges? Yeah.
Let's see. Challenges for me, I would say, I don't know. Honestly, the process was great. Designing and delivering. I really don't have any major challenges that I can think of. The only thing I would say is just, I don't know, probably the platform. I know we were working on a limited budget, and Barbara and her team were very generous in how they approached our project. And so that being said, they did a wonderful, tremendous job. Given our budget, though, we were limited to the iOS iPad platform. If anything, we've heard feedback from other players, educators. They love it on different platforms. That's a future goal, of course, depending on funding. But, yeah, that's something that we'll definitely work toward.
Excellent. Barbara, do you have any?
Yeah, it's, you know, the biggest challenge is the thing you can't put in, because game design is inherently compromised in choices. Yeah. And there were so many other great ideas that we had with how we could expand this for purchasing. There's so much more we could do with credit score. And just on a budget and a timeline in that player's window, you have to set some things aside and say, okay, we'll put that in a later build later. And that's hard. Going out to multiple platforms is always tricky. Going out to the Android iOS brings a whole raft of other challenges to it that we're feeling acutely now that it's released, because then you have maintenance. Not only do you have to release on different environments, but maintenance to keep it up on all of those. And I know there's some folks that we're missing because they may not have the right platform. So that's always hard. Mm-hmm. And then also one of our challenges that we face in extension is distribution and marketing. We are not companies. We are not selling this. We're not marketing and putting ads. And so I always joke that there's kind of a high cost of giving away something for free. Word out and helping people realize how powerful this is that's just always a challenge.
Yeah, it's funny because in the recent podcast that I've made, that always comes across. The marketing side of it is really challenging, and there's never any budget for it. So, yeah, that's true. But it looks like you worked really well together as a team, so and that made it easier. So that's great. I would say that's one of the key things about the success of a project, right? I would like, as a closing thought, if you tell me what's the biggest takeaway from the project for you individually, what would you say it is?
Well, I think Barbara kind of nailed it earlier when she said, you know, we brought to the table certain strengths, and they, of course, brought some terrific strengths to this project. And I think that's how we've been successful, is just as a team identifying what we bring to the table, what we're good at, and just making that mesh. And in our case, I feel like it worked really well.
Awesome. Yeah, what we were just talking about, that team is important. You know, in a lot of the writing I'm doing now and trying to articulate the process for developing good games, one of the things that's clear is that a lot of times for teams who are creating educational games, their content specialist is the game designer in a Google search. You know, the game designer is trying to figure out the best way to teach math or language or whatever it is. And so for us, it is so critically important to have somebody who not only knows the content, but knows how the teaching of the content works, what works and doesn't. And if you have that, which we had in this team, if you have that and they can tell you, we know what the room is going to look like where this will be used. We know what the challenges are. We know why games can teach something that other things can't do. When you have someone like that, then you just create the process and it works beautifully. So not only do I like these gentlemen and they were great to work with, but the process worked so well because of the knowledge they brought to the table, and we're very lucky to have that in them.
That is great. One thing, what is your view on gaming and education? What do you think it works, and what do you think it's important? Serious games and education.
I personally think that they have a significant place in the future of education. And the reason I feel that way is because I think that games provide an opportunity for experiential learning that are not available in any other way. Think about... Learning by doing is very powerful, but in fact, I was just talking to a gentleman earlier about education for farmers. But then we say a lot of the limitations are, you know, the seasons. In the wintertime, you can't go out and do anything on a farm. There's also some dangers and costs involved with taking people out to a farm and doing certain types of education. Well, why not put that in a digital format? Why not create it in a way that's scalable, for one? Two is safer. Three is more cost effective. Yeah. And not only that, you know, can be done in a fictional way that's even more memorable, something that will stick with you for a long time. But again, it's that idea you go into this environment, this virtual environment, make decisions and experience the consequences of those decisions. A lot of times we know teenagers especially have to learn the hard way. You can tell them many times, credit scores are important. Go and do this, but they're not listening. Once they actually experience that for themselves because a zombie attacks them, if they don't do certain things, then that's memorable. That's something that they can say, oh, okay, that's why you need to you need to stay on top of your credit score. So I think there's a significant spot in the future of education for video game-based education.
No. I run a learning games lab. Obviously, I value games for learning, but I will say that I'm a fan of all learning. I'm a fan of all the different kinds of learning, and I don't think you have to have games for all kinds of learning. There's really fantastic ways to learn. Reading, I've heard, is a tremendous way to learn something. So that's really to learn. But what I will say about game is exactly what he said, that gaming then allows you to implement, to apply, to practice, to fail multiple ways, to identify all the different ways to fail in a low-risk environment. It can be social. It can be collaborative. It can take something that usually takes months to learn and allow that to happen in a shorter period of time. And the exciting thing about gaming now is we're seeing all of this put into place. We're seeing teachers who are really getting fantastic thinking about how to integrate games into their classroom. We're seeing kids who are learning by creating games. So I feel like as this field has matured, as it really has over the past 30 years, we're seeing games not as the only way to learn or a replacement way to learn, but as a tool that really helps us learn the things that are best to learn in games. And when games do that and hit that sweet spot, oh, it sings. It makes it so
Yeah, what you guys said, it's incredible, and I agree completely. It's about what we say is safe to fail environments. So that's it. You can fail here because it's safe. So you don't do it in the real life. And the gamification is great, but it needs to be justified. There needs to be a reason for it to be there, because it's true. There are different ways of learning, and we just need to find the right one for each thing that we want to teach. So that's
You're
excellent. Okay, guys, thank you so much. That was amazing. Thank you for sharing your experience and your insights. And it was great learning about the process of creating a game with educational purposes. It's fantastic. If you can share with us how people can find you online and the project as well, the game.
Yeah, well, I work for University of Idaho, and so I've just got a bio page. My name is Luke Erickson. Contact info, erickson@uidaho.edu. And as far as finding the game, Barbara, you can go ahead and tell them the best way to do that.
You can find it on the App Store for iOS, Night of the Living Dead. Google search will get you there as well. And if all else fails, you can hit learninggameslab.org and see that as well as other games.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, and it was great talking to you.